what?
And just being passive there, I think it's not too much fun. I'll just ask you, your mind, to be a bit more active. I want you to teach, yes, of course. But, and I also want you to think while you're teaching and while you're transmitting what you're teaching to others. For a moment, just think of what you are teaching. It could be a, something really solid that I'm teaching this exercise, or in general, you name just for yourself. Take a moment. No, just what are you teaching? You can close your eyes if it helps. And if it just, the coin finds its place, how are you teaching it? Can you find some adjectives or tools that you can think of now? Also, it could be a self-reflective how, like, do I talk a lot? Do I use this? Do I do that? Do I let the students do that? And the question that I really want to focus around today is why? Why are you teaching all that? Why are you doing all that? Do you know? Another moment. I mean, that is the big question, because we live on this. We take a step back and we just ask these questions for documenting now. Because we are teaching, we are questioning ourselves every day, hopefully. But why documenting? And most of the time when we think of documenting, maybe it's writing that comes first. And personally, I had been writing since I know myself, I love writing. But also it was the kinesthetic fulfillment of me being able to listen to something. Without moving myself, I could not relate to any information. And I was moving my pen, then it was helping, and I was a good student, and it worked. And I moved all the way to social sciences, sociology, da-da-da. But then it was not enough, so I was really into moving and dancing. I found my way. But then, I just realized that this writing is really for myself. I need it, I'm writing it, it's good, and it's also good to go back to my notes and words and images, whatnot. But then when it came to sharing these pieces of information with others or publishing them, because I was into advertising, it changed. And I learned a lot from this capitalist place I passed through. Because there was these questions: who is your audience when you're writing, and what do you want him or her to think and do after receiving what you share? And this I find very relevant in my own teaching, but also in my writing too. And not only as showing myself, presenting myself, but also how can I help them to relate to the material that is out there. And then, of course, documents are all over now, as TED Talks, as Wikipedia, and like I come out here with words, and this paper is in itself a document for me. Why? And I'm referring to this golden circle idea of Simon Sinek on leading and affecting people when we address them. I thought it's really worth, like, it's really in everything we function, there is these levels of circles, ranging from why, how, to what. What we know, it's worth sharing, this is what I do, da da da. How some of us know, some of us are not really conscious of it and not moderated, but why, it is believed that a very few of us really know what is our purpose for doing this. And this purpose is worth sharing, but it also feeds back to what and how. So what we write and what we share. And therefore, in documenting, purpose is of course very much related to your focus of the subject matter and tools and means, but more so to the audience you are addressing it. So why keeping record and then sharing it with others? Going through the IWD process, these questions were more relevant for many of us, I think. And we came to really hot discussions, talking about hotness, Many of us were saying, like, it is really something that I utilize for myself. It's really self-reflection. I do my planning, then I change my plans, and I can see the change and relate to how I'm functioning. And there's descriptions, and more so, if I share what I do, it's my career visibility. I can be accountable for institutions to hire me, and but also improve myself, taking a distance from what I do for a more holistic picture of what's happening. Focusing and researching, taking myself more serious, etc. And self-assurance, of course. But for students, some of us was like, no, no, but it's really a tool I want to use for my students, for helping them in their self-learning. I can create scores and guidelines, but also as a feedback tool. After a class, I can share my documents with them about them, and they can really progress in following all this. And also I can share this why. They get the what and how, but maybe they want to learn more about my intentions, so I share them with this. This was one other stand, so, and I'll be inspiration for them. But in this discussion around students, this diverse nature of students came to our hand, the different needs in learning, this kinesthetic, audio, visual side of our learning, which really corresponded immediately to the site. How the kinesthetic, audio, and visual aspects in documenting. So what is the need of a student? What is the need of a receiver in the internet environment? So that was another aspect. And as students, we remembered, or we are still, some of us, willing to be students all our lives. So it's like, but it's good to receive comments, it's good to receive feedback, it's good to see the outcome. So I'd like to be active in this as a student and be active in documenting and following what I'm receiving. But also as a student, feel having the freedom to share and give back to the teacher. So that has another perspective. And then what Kirsten was sharing, as an exchange for between colleagues as a tool maybe for collaboration, and at an institutional level, which this whole project has institutions, not only independent artists, teachers, because you are handing your students or group of people to another teacher, so it's a good tool to just tell her where these people are coming from, what you shared with them, so that she can build on it or just totally go to the opposite way, but at least she has a reference point. So, and I believe it's not only for institutional, but it is very relevant in that. And it also creates a collaborative communication platform. But also for colleagues, if you share your scores, your ideas, they're like, ah, maybe I'll try this. I have an idea what it could be, let me develop it myself. So it gets empowers you to create your own thing, but being inspired by someone else. And that's it. So it's like mirroring, sharing information, and handing over generously, because this platform is so open. And actually, when I invited a young teacher to this platform, she said, really, am I going to really share what I do openly with every other teacher? And I just asked, don't you share that with your students? So of course, it's all about teaching. And really going back to the root, Latin root of the documenting itself is lesson proof from docere, which takes root from to teach. So documenting in its root has the component of teaching. And of course, tools for documenting now was another subject that we've been discussing. It's like our notebooks, our pens, our laptops, cameras, phones, recorders, whatever. But then we were like, but academic, like how to write a proper like article, or maybe I'm going to upload my PhD. But why not just upload a picture as an artistic, we call it in art therapy, artistic feedbacking, artistic response. Maybe that is a tool to learn. You just see a picture and it gives you an idea. Why not share this and be laid back in documenting, like considering this as a document too? Because if you're talking about inspiration and getting ideas, I mean, I get books and just a quotation is just opening huge doors. So why not a poem? Just a sentence would not inspire me and useful for me in my teaching. But if you go back to the real definition, I took it from Internet, Business Dictionary, and I really find it very relevant for IDOCTE, something tangible, that records communication or facts with the help of marks, words, or symbols. A document serves to establish one or several facts and can be relied upon as a proof thereof. Generally speaking, documents function as evidence of intentions. So for me, we really go back to the why. And I think within IDOCT, we are welcoming records and documents, anything serving as a representation of a person's thinking and doing by means of symbolic marks, whatever they may be, and empowering the documenter to claim ownership and authorship with respect to the lineage, referencing the lineage. So claim your work, take it more serious, and share it here. As in any creation we do, not only as artists but as humans, if we are motivated to do it and we fall into the flow state and we dive into this pleasure of mere creating and the outcome is not really important. So this is speaking from the mantis, we really invite you to just go for it and don't really be concerned about the end product at the beginning. Of course, in the process you can get more perfectionist and really end up having academic or just artistic also outcomes. And if we don't know why we do it, we endure more against all the obstacles that come. So if you relate to what you're doing, why you're doing, maybe it will help. So that we could be the one and only thing, I would wish to remind you to check in with yourself now before diving into the IDOCT world, considering that we are inviting you to document actively. Why are you interested in documenting? And what means of documenting you are utilizing or willing to learn to utilize more? And of course, if you're a receiver, there is a huge treasure of many documents there. But maybe you are not a receiver. You're willing to produce, but you're not interested in the receiving aspect. But I just want to remind that if you kind of can empathize with the receiver, you can create more and you can be reached more and read more. And of course, utilizing the already existing documents is another active place you may choose to be in this time, these two, three days we're going to share and onwards. And but the world out there, not only the participants of your class, are interested in what you do and how you do it, and you can reach them by knowing why do it all, why you do it all. And now we're going to get more deeper into the documentation, different ways of documenting that are already have existed and researched and explored by our panelists. And Gita is going to be the moderator of the panel. I invite you all to talk deeper on this matter. Thank you so much.
Project, actually I got really into documentation. You might have seen that I produced several IDOCs
because I really got interested in the practice of it. So what I'm doing now, since this project started, is like I have set up a research about poetic documentation, because I'm interested in poetic documentation. And as I'm teaching, a lot of what I'm teaching and sharing is based on Lise Anderson's work. So the name of the project is Visions, Plural, a research on poetic documentation based on Lise Anderson's work. So that's for the artistic part. For the teaching part, after the experience I had in Stolzenhagen last year, I made a proposal of a movement proposal and a drawing feedback. I realized that people, like, after this class, people created a lot of iDocs and gathered it in a folder and actually realized that it was really working like a feedback system. And so I started to get really interested in that idea of feedback and through documenting, and also between participants of a class. So I made this proposal to go on with this research for the input stamps, and I propose actually to a workshop where people would do every day the same movement practice based on Lise Anderson's work, and would document it through writing, recording our writing, drawing. Just done for a week. And what I can just say, like, I'm really happy that I had the chance to try, because it's really an experiment. And I can really see in the from the beginning to the end that this feeding back through documentation is really working in terms of improving people's movement practice.
My name is Rio. Rio Rutzinger. Busy curating the workshop and research program of Pustans in the late 90s, beginning of Funcionales. If you remember, what the audience doesn't remember, is forgotten, because Pustans doesn't got documented. That is why we, in a way, even were so interested in IDOC-D, because we really suck in documenting things, and we thought we can get here some knowledge from people who are actually interested in it. And supported by hosting it, by trying to have lots of conversations on it. We I still remember when in 94 we had Steve Paxton and Tricia Brown for the first time on stage after 20 years and no camera. Already existed at that time, no cell phones, but video cameras, yes, forgot, and that's a little bit our legacy of documentation. Not very proud of it, but it's historically proved that there is no history other than printed history. We have one funny way of documenting here since 12 years now. There's a visual artist, Lorna Weyermann, who has been drawing in classes here ever since the early murals, and she has a kind of a calligraphic way of drawing. She watches dancers dance, and then she, without looking what she draws, she writes down the movement. So I can bring tomorrow some examples of her work. And it is, you can really tell in which class she was by looking at the different drawings that really look like a scripture. Yeah, like calligraphy. But other than that, it was really through initiatives like Kerstin's talk series or Sri Louise's talk series, people who were interested in hosting talks, not actual classes, and document them, that we started engaging more in this field. And yeah, and with IDOC-D, we hoped that we can go more in depth. It's been an experiment for us also, with you and with Ria, Maria Post, teaching here as part of the IDOC-D, and generally dropping this issue a little bit more for dance teachers here in general. We have 140 teachers coming here in these 4 weeks, So it will hopefully have quite a repercussion in this following 2 weeks, but also especially on this weekend, because my personal take is a little bit like Kerstin's. It's not like the first or second or third thought that I have when thinking about something that is exciting. Documenting, it doesn't come to mind. But of course, there are several takes on it. I think practice should still be the first thing, especially in our profession. But by having documentation in place, I think you are just a lot better off to situate the whole art form in society. There is, in terms of academia or in terms of generally being acknowledged by science, you need a lot of material and proof, and that's already why I do think that it's very necessary, because there's not so many ways to get more popularity without losing integrity, and I think documenting is one of those ways, or using scientific tools is one of those very few ways, and that's why we also try to engage a little bit in this as a festival. Which can only be always a tipping point, never something consistent, but it's at the same time has the possibility to highlight something, and this, which will hopefully happen this weekend with this symposium.
I can use this one. Hello, I'm Laura. I'm Laura Karreman. Actually, I was born in Utrecht, the Netherlands, but I'm now working at Ghent University in Belgium. And I'm here through the Belgian IDOD group, actually. They invited me half a year ago to present a lecture on my research project, and then we had a wonderful exchange, and now I'm here. But I'm also really happy to see some Dutch people here who I know from the Dutch context while working on the Insight Movement Knowledge Project that some of you might be familiar with, a research project that was set up by Emilio Greco, a dance company that also dealt with dance documentation issues. I also always feel very humble in a context like this, because I have to admit that I'm really not trained as a dancer. I'm coming more from an academic context. I'm coming from media studies and performance studies. And last year I started on a research project that deals with exploring the opportunities and implications of working with digital media like motion capture when working on dance documentation and dance analysis. Probably some of you may or may not be familiar with the idea of motion capture. Motion capture is a technology that's really been, is now really huge, especially in the gaming and film industry when it comes to enhancing human movement in digital animations. It's also used in movement research and musicology, for example, movements of musicians. And only a very tiny part of how motion capture is used is in dance practice. And there, and again, it's, you may be familiar with the biped performance that was made by Merce Cunningham in collaboration with digital designers of the Open Ended Group in 1999. That's a very famous performance where motion capture was used. And there it was used as an artistic tool. So even a smaller part was used for using motion capture as a means to analyze and document dance. And in my research project, I look at what it means to do that. And lots of dancers and choreographers, I think rightfully so, are very skeptical about this idea. Because what happens in motion capture, optical motion capture, there are markers put on joints of dancers. And then via infrared cameras, you can measure how the three-dimensional trajectories of those markers are measured in space. So what you get out of this is, in fact, it's a kind of raw data. So you get lots of numbers. And then that is, in a way, it is not yet a representation of dance, it's just numbers. So what the comment is of people coming from dance practices, okay, but are you not in a way kind of quantifying our dance? You can't do that because it's nothing left of the artistic ideas that are behind the dance, that you only capture superficially in this way. And yes, of course, this is true. So you need, what you need to perhaps visualize this data coming from motion capture, you need to think a lot about, okay, how do we then perhaps visualize these choreographic ideas that we want to convey and communicate? And I'm sure that that's not even so different of what most of you have been dealing with quite intensively the past 2 years. How do we go about, you know, taking kind of medium and technology and then thinking about what aspects we want to communicate specifically and how do we go about it? And I guess that is, in fact, the issue and the question that I think is really interesting, and what I like about this research area, that it forces you to talk with dancers, talk with choreographers, and actually tickle them a little bit and ask them to make explicit these ideas in a very different way than they would do in a setting of a studio, just a setting of a live transmission of dance, which is no doubt the golden standard of dance communication. And I'm also, maybe I should make clear that I'm not sitting here as a kind of advocate for you to all use motion capture, because it's a quite difficult and cumbersome medium to use, but it's very interesting to look at. And I hope to meet lots of you the coming days in all kinds of settings. Thank you.
Yeah, I think this shift of borders is really an interesting one for the dance field at the moment. And being invited here, my name is Ingo Diehl, showed me how much I was busy in the last years with documentation, which was really interesting for me to have that perspective or looking from that perspective of the things I was doing. I had developed this research project, Dance Techniques 2010, which was on actually a question: how can we document physical knowledge in order that we can make it accessible again for physicality? And we were trying to develop different perspectives on individual teaching languages to reveal through films, through scores, through interviews, through texts, research, and so on. And it was out of the need that I felt we need material in the field of our practice to access. We can relate to as examples, as possibilities to differently, also physically, relate beyond a one-to-one relation to a teacher. After that, I was busy with thinking about documenting for the document's sake, for one could say, no? For the follow project of Tanzplan, Tanzfond, where we were thinking how can we document in order that these documents could be interesting for a future. And then after that I changed to Frankfurt, to the university, to be a teacher there now for the Master Program for Contemporary Dance Pedagogy, where I'm actually busy with the other perspective, with the documents themselves. So in the last years, there have been a large amount of documents out from artists where other researchers were strongly involved in De Keyser Marker, Paxton, Burroughs, Forsyth, and so on. Emil Greco was named, and there are many more. And the question is, what are those documents? What are they telling us for our practice? And my question was, how can we reveal physicality out of those documents? Because a document in itself has no value. A document is just something. It's a question, what do we do with it, and what can we read out? And one of, I find really an interesting point we came with the student group we were working with now in the last 1.5 years was how much is the personal relation to the document important? So is it in the end the document, the information which is in there, or is it my biography responding, relating to that document in a certain way? So from creating documents to dealing with documents is somehow the process I was mainly busy with.
Okay, my name is Andrea Keitz. I mean, listening to all this expertise, I think about how can I keep it brief, actually, because we want to talk afterwards. So I just name a few connections I have. Like, I was responsible for the video documentation for the Dance Techniques 2010. So I was part of this project, looking for point of views towards dance and representation of dance and how you can use it for reconstruction of or add information to your own work. I'm at the moment part of Tanz for Erbe. I'm doing the video documentation for this. That means I'm following the process of recreation of works, and I try to capture the working methods and as well as the results people are working towards. So starting from the end. And I was invited by Anouk Laurent to Visions in the beginning of this year, so I could join the beginning of it for a week and exchange about ideas. And actually it was very nice to meet back after quite a while, where we met like long ago in working on improvisation both. And this is where I'm coming from dance improvisation. I bumped into video, and since 2010 I'm working professionally in the field of video documentation of contemporary dance. I did this intensively until the end of 2010, and since then I'm more and more connected to artistic projects, all connected to video with different artists, mainly based in Berlin. In addition to that, I'm teaching on documentation and archiving at Hochschule in Frankfurt and partly also in Berlin. I think, yeah.
Thank you all. If I can make the first question about the audience, because one thing we've talked about is who do you do this for, which can range from me, myself in a room, to anyone who can find it. And particularly, Ingo, what you said about how do we create something physical out of this again, not read it, go, well, that's very nice. And I, whoever wants to, I don't want to do the teacher thing. But this, what is your experience of the audience and constructing a physical sense from documentation?
Maybe if I can just jump in there, because creating a document is already a certain perspective of analyzing the thing I'm working with. Just looking at how dance techniques is used, it is used in totally different ways than, it was meant that it could be used in many different ways. But I think there is this moment of letting the document go, that within the document it has its own kind of life and it responds with a person or a group of people dealing with it. And that can be very physical, and hopefully it is. So I think it is a transfer from physicality in a document and a retransfer, which needs the same or a similar amount of intensity in order to bring it back to physicality, because the physicality in itself probably needs more time to get aware, to experience it.
Anouk, you were nodding very heavily.
No, I mean, for me, as it's the research is the beginning, so I haven't yet. But I was just thinking about what is not physical. Like, for example, when I watch a video, like I'm using my eyes, and so I feel like I'm engaged in a physical. I'm just thinking, what is a non-physical document? It was just a question that popped to my mind. So that's why it's a note in like. Because when you read, you're engaged, your eyes are engaged, anything like also you get some sensation from what you read, your imagination is triggered. It's like, so for me, I don't make so much distinction between something like as if a document would not be, as it needed some kind of translation into something physical, because for me, it's already physical. In any, I mean, maybe I just make it up now, but, or it's like, yeah, it's a question. What is a non-physical document?
If I can bounce that to Laura, because...
Yeah, I'm not sure if Daphne mentioned this or Kirsten mentioned this in the introduction, but one of you mentioned something about what it means to create somehow a kind of tangible object coming out of dance. Daphne, I thought it was you. I think you also mentioned that is, in fact, a very political move. And maybe that's something that's also worth to point out, that creating these kind of tangible objects can be very important, either consciously or subconsciously, for the dance field, to make something that you really can't deny its presence, because we all have to deal with this endless question about the ephemerality of dance and where is the dance performance when it's not being staged. And it's particularly difficult when you then go into questions about cultural heritage. Well, for example, I don't know how far you've been looking at comparisons to visual arts field the past 2 years, but they have such a hugely different approach on how to deal with questions about cultural heritage, because they have strategies and places where they put all the paintings, you know, because they are actually there as physical objects. So in a way, they're also harder to deny just because they're tangible. And maybe one other remark, because you mentioned the audience, and this is just a loose quote, but I thought it was interesting. In a recent publication called Dance in Theory, it's an edited volume, and there's a curator, Ruth Nowak, and she mentions this idea that archiving may sometimes be considered as a kind of dreaming. Why? Because in a way, you can never anticipate how in future this document may be used. So I think that's, I always wonder in why documents, that the creators of the documents, they can be so evasive in what their actual objective is with their document. In fact, you kind of want to pull it out of them, but they don't kind of admit, like, this is what I wanted to produce. And I think that's also, that's just a kind of deeply artistic strategy, that you want to leave it open in a way for future recipients and audiences.
That makes me think of the idea of the gap. The two things that come up a lot when talking about the documentation was, one, capturing the poetic and being okay about the gap. And I know I want to get Andrea to say something about this.
Talking about the gap. Since I'm also busy with since 2 years, I'm part of a research group, which in these terms I'm working of documentation as artistic research. And so in being informed in both, like in being informed in producing documents that are used in research, that are going in the archive, that are helping an audience to see a performance if they missed it, that are helping students to write their thesis. And on the other hand, going in the place where I feel I have the need to approach dance with video as a tool in a different way, so I can also catch the kinesthetic and the dynamic, which is not a visual representation of the dance, but which is telling the other thing, so the other. And there is, of course, a gap between the two of them, but meanwhile, I'm very much... maybe also because I'm working on this field in dance as cultural heritage, I see how people pull all the registers, actually. If they have to recreate a work which has been done in the 80s, for example, I see Annette Hoffmann going to her notes, and she's looking at her notes, and she's looking at old videos, and she's looking at photos, and she's talking to people, and then she's using her body knowledge. And that's the most interesting moment for me, when then I see this. There are a lot of things that also students or people who are busy with this kind of work can have access to, but the final solution is just inscribed in her body. So she made dancers touch her doing a move because she couldn't explain it. So she explained it over and over, they did it wrong, and then she went like, okay, touch me here. And she did it, and then they went like, ah. And then they did it. And it this was quite an interesting moment to me, because I think this is a gap that documentation can't fill. And that's actually also the bit that I like about dance, and that dance is something different than the documents of dance. It's a different thing. And so if you have access to all the possible means of documentation, that doesn't mean that you... I wanted to say that you make dance überflüssig, and I don't get a problem.
Superfluous.
Superfluous, really? Oh, superfluous.
Ah, superfluous, yeah, okay.
Unnecessary.
Ah, much better. Okay.
Maybe relating to that, I think this question of multi-layeredness is really an important one, because we relate differently to different information. If we create a document, this is one layer, and the purpose of this document in one time is, like what you said, is maybe one to document a class in a certain way. But if I want to get access for certain intentions and things, if they are not inscribed in the document, then I will have to build other intentions on that document of what that is. And this, I think, is really kind of an interesting point on how we relate to documents. It's kind of a creative act, how we can reveal something out of them. It's not necessarily written one-to-one in the document. And I find that quite relieving when I work with documents.
For me, the audience question, I remember when Kerstin first approached us regarding this idea and whether we would be interested in involving. This was one of our main concerns, because we have experience with EU projects for the last 10, 15 years. And for the EU, you have to document whether you like it or not, like importance. But so I always thought, okay, if we make already a documentation on this and this work, how can we make this usable for actual receivers? Because in the end, whatever you deliver content-wise, the EU doesn't read. You have to write it, but they only look at the numbers in the end. I've never heard any comment on the content that we wrote, and we write sometimes up to 100 pages as a report. The only thing we get back is that we didn't file the subscription for a newspaper properly, but this is very precisely then divided in 2 months and 8 months or something. So that's why I think the audience question was very important to be addressed as in a way us being the audience in the first place. I guess that's by nature or by definition, by default, the practitioners are the first ones who are going to profit from the whatever is going to be produced here. And ideally, once the document, in whatever way, in written or moving picture or still picture, is there, then it can be used for many purposes, also abused. But it was clear that we need a critical mass also that is interested in, because in the end, French cats being thrown in the air by Jan Fabre will make the masses, and the rest nobody cares about. Even on Facebook, where every now and then something interesting is posted, it's only the boulevard stuff, even in the whole dance world, that gets any interest. The rest is not shared or not
not so much put forward. So it means that we need to create our audiences ourselves in the first place, and then maybe use it for to promote the art form or to promote the documentation of the art form.
That's actually an interesting point in terms of placing the documents in a wider context, because it can be a tool for your own artistic practice, but also it changes something. The Tanzplan book, you know, that's a tome, you know, that's a very weighty book. And that sort of changes space a little bit. And iDocti has a website with many people attached to it that changes things again a little bit. So do you have any thoughts on how the act of documentation and this idea that dance is so ephemeral, how that will affect things and the way that we document that might actually feed back into how we work and how we make the dance we do?
I think actually the creation of this, all these different kinds of documents, they will invite people to look differently onto different kinds of work. I mean, when you watch the world of documentation right now and you look at it according to the different kinds of dance works that are done or the different ways people are teaching, you see it's a lot about, not about form and aesthetics, it's a lot about sensual work, it's a lot about BMC, it's a lot about deeper stuff. So the way things are documented is kind of getting closer to that, I think. And in this, it's a kind of dialogue. And I think in this dialogue, there will be a clarification of what the work is about as well. So I think it will educate the documenters for sure, the practitioners for sure, and I think it will also educate the people who are looking at it. It will take some time, but I have this kind of mission.
I was just thinking about if, like for me, I think documents are also ephemeral. I think they have a longer lifespan than a performance or like something happening in the present, but they also have a deadline. So that's one thing. And the other thing is also, like for me, like I also consider that, for example, a performance is also a document. It's also that it's something that is actually set in a certain time, that is received in a certain time by certain people. So I don't see very much difference between a performance and the documentation. So, yeah, it's just to, and the same way that you can, so as you can consider a performance or a piece as a document of your work, and you can come back to this as a stepping stone, like something to go further. Like, I don't know, I'm thinking of Cunningham, for example. Is this like constantly changing, moving, working, like reworking, changing things, changing the performance, every performance or thing like that. So that's a way of using ephemeral things to stable enough things to move forward as performance. But for me, the documentation is the same. It's just it's a stable thing for a while. And also the media, also like some media, like now some media are becoming obsolete. So you have to change media. And so you're always like this idea of, I mean, it's almost that the documentation is talking about impermanence. And it's like actually when you start, I feel like as you start to work on documentation, that's what you are, I'm kind of working on integrating, something like that.
I find it funny that in the end, the possibilities that we now have with all the technological means lead to an incredible amount of data, and in a way, if we have documented 12 hours of a conversation or of an improvisation, then if you don't have a plan on what to do with it, it's quite useless, the document or the documentation of it. And this is something that probably dance has to learn much more than other art forms or that have much more decades of experience doing so. To get use of all the data that nobody will ever scan, even, yeah, that it exists, but it's already on the data dump somewhere on a hard drive, and I think the It takes, of course, also a specialist to work on that. Yeah, I know that the Hungarian group of IDOCT, they did a few documents of classes, but it took also Esther to be there together with the videographer to really edit it to become something that is absolutely worthwhile. It was Peter's class, no? And it's very important that these voices stay there, I think, in the beginning. And only then it's really a quality that is totally useful for receivers.
I think reflecting about our work got part of what we do also in the studio. So creating the documents is part of our practice. So they are manifestations of that. So they go in both directions, out of the our practice in the studio and back in. And I think the question is, or one question is really going in relation to what you just said, is how do we relate to these masses of information? How do we set framings from our working perspective on them, and then for the people dealing with it again, so that there is somehow a context of what that is? But in the end, again, like I said earlier, it is just what we do with the documents. And the more documents will be out, the more I think this will be a question. Interestingly, now with all those artist-led researches from these well-known artists which are around, a lot of those materials are used from other disciplines, but hardly from the field of dance. And I find that really interesting. So what is that? Why is it so difficult to translate that back in what we do? I think there is a historical relation in terms of that knowledge in dance was given forward through our own experience. So if we had years of experience, we could give that further, we could teach it. But these documents give a total different perspective on what transmission could be, on how we access knowledge, on how I can use a document just for another process of exchanging on what is in there. And I think this is really something which the more complex the field of dance is getting, the more these are questions, I think, which are, I find, important.
I think actually if you have the same documents and you hand it to five people, they will have all a different interpretation of this document. And which I find a value, but at the same time, none of them can claim it that they did it right. No, there is no doing it right if you retranslate a document. It's just your personal truth in what you see, which might be completely different to the truth of somebody else. And you have to be ready to face that, and you have to enjoy that. And if not, it's not going to be a pleasure. And I think that's a little bit the fact why people just avoid to work too much with it. It's not, because their interpretation is not the unique, only best one.
And maybe one other point to that, they are historical in the moment they are out. So this is not contemporary. A document is not contemporary anymore. It's historical. And so it's a document of a time. It's past. And I think that's just fabulous. We can also, it also says something about the document itself of letting go.
At this point, I want to invite you to any comments that you have on what's been said, or any questions that you want them to talk about. Yes. Because we're recording it, I will repeat your question. Oh, no, look at that.
She's a professional. Okay. My question actually looks at if we think of documentation not as translation, but if we think of it as revealing protocols, then I always have the question for myself, and that's why I use this opportunity now to ask you, how do I decide what to expose? And I find myself always kind of balancing between this fine line of the personal and the formal. And yeah, I would be really interested to hear your thoughts on that issue.
Just see if it's not a good idea.
but take it maybe.
If the feedback needs, I'll repeat the question.
No, I don't want to respond. I'm just busy with the technical.
Anouk,
can you
translate it to me?
Can you translate it?
I think what I heard from that is how do I pick what to record? And sorry, the microphone dance.
I don't see, like personally, I don't see a real separation between my intellectual, my emotional, my physical being. And maybe really, Anouk, you could respond to that, because it seems you have really developed a practice that tackles this. What kind of criteria, maybe, do you have for deciding on what to expose in which context and, like, yeah, this line between the personal and the formal.
So far, I'm very interested in subjectivity. I mean, objectivity too, but okay, let's talk about subjectivity now. Any point of view is interesting to me also in the frame, because what I'm also, the frame that I'm working in as a documentation, it's also a polyphonic. So it's not only one perspective. It's always like the idea that there is several point of view. And it's because of this several point of view that I find that any kind of perspective is interesting. So that's how I choose. So actually, I'm not... I mean, then it's sometimes like the document is bad quality, but I like, there's something in it that I like. I put some video on the website that is not like super professional. Like, I'm not a videographer, but there's something in there that I find is transmitting in terms of people experience. So, yeah. And also, for me, anything is interesting if you have other point of view, if they are not the only one.
Do you guide then the person who is the recipient of this document to see what you think is the special thing about...
Okay, I'm not trying to... that's the thing, actually. What I'm trying to do is just... Well, it's very new, but okay, let's say... What I think I'm trying to do is that, to come back also to this idea of gaps, is that I trust that people will make their own experience out of what they get. So I'm not actually controlling, I'm not into the... But it's also because I'm not... It's not about... The documentation that I'm interested in is not about cultural...
Heritage.
I think it is cultural heritage, because it's the heritage of a certain time. And I think in this time, this idea of collectivity, sharing knowledge, it's part of this contemporary time. So I think it's a contemporary way of documenting. But so for me, what is important is just that there's enough different perspectives so people can create their own knowledge, because I think this is what I do. I select all the time. Like, I'm not grasping it all. I just make selection all the time, and I'm composing my own experience all the time with fragments. And yeah. So also to come back to this idea of gaps in another way, it's like, it's for me, I realize that I don't have to care about the gaps. It's part of it. And actually, it's really what I realize is that it's in the gaps that you are leaving some space for the other to do their work. It's like I really don't feel telling people what they have to see.
Ingo, you were going
to... Yeah, I just wanted to relate to that earlier statement you gave, because I think it relates also to the question, why do I document? Why do I want to document? And I think in this questioning and observing... kind of state, I will find individual answers to what is important to me. And it's that perspective and that individuality which I think is of such a big value. So not as a general thing, but as a very individual kind of response.
Yeah, just also one thing, because... my work is based on Lisa Nelson's work, and actually the question that she's asking to the audience is like, are you improvising when I'm dancing?
So it's really the idea that you are, everybody is just constructing his own experience as a, as an audience, and you can trust that.
So I think two more questions, and then, yeah.
Thank you. I wanted to relate also what Mariella was saying before, and what you say, Anouk, and to this question when you said it's so, it's so interesting that people from other fields are using the material, but not from the dance field. And then I was wondering, is it also a question of like developing a language, you know? Like, because, I mean, if you have a Lisa Nelson as a reference point, this is a very big, like, world which is opening, which gives me a reference. But if I just make my scribble and I make my poem and then I hope somebody can relate to it, it's a different thing. And like philosophy or so, they are like busy in creating a terminology to talk about things also. I think this is interesting because, of course, the individual and the polyphony, and the different aspects, they are so valuable. But at the same time, what is this? How do we, which language are we talking? Is it the words, but then it's also video and it's photo? It's like a very open source.
I think every time has created their language in terms of dance. We see it in the history of notations. Each new dance needed a new form of trying to make that accessible. And I think this is a question of our time now. How do we make this shift, in the constant shift in the field? How do we find ways to make accessible what is important to us from that perspective of the practice? So I think this is a constant thing in the field, what we have to work on.
And what I think what is also quite important is that in the moment that you are documenting yourself, you cannot really foresee what this will be used for. So, I mean, if you do it as an artist and you do it for yourself to understand your creation at the moment, this is one thing. But if these documents then go out somewhere, you give them and you don't have control and you don't know when and at what point they will be used and how they will be read, because people will look from a different context then again to it. So this is quite an interesting thing, actually.
Laura, you work a lot with different types of multimodal work.
Yeah, I think it's... I just want to point out how the way this term language is used here. Because I think you all with the iDocs, you know, they're really kind of a manifest of how many different types of languages there are. There's how many different types of dance teachers you are. And in a way, there's all different languages. And then it becomes a little bit complicated because, in fact, a language is supposed to be something that's shared by a larger group, a means to communicate with a larger group that a larger group has in common. And of course, the challenge here is that, in a way, with this confrontation with a document, it might be in a similar medium, a similar mode that's used by other dance teachers, but in a way, again and again, you're confronted with a particular voice, what the first question also kind of mentioned. There's always the individual voice, which is very different from the other voice that communicates through the same medium. So this might, I don't know how coherent this sounds. But of course, then there's a challenge all the time that there are, in a way, a new kind of literacies developed by dancers who are studying these documents and are interacting with them. And I mean, you can also, this way, how different languages or perhaps literacies are developed, we have also seen with the development of video, which was only introduced at the end of the 70s. And now we almost, you know, we often tend to look at it as an almost kind of transparent medium. Well, in fact, no, we learned how to read it. We learned how to read video images. There's a way that this screen presents a dancing body to us that we have to learn how to kind of visually extrapolate how we see the muscle tension on the screen and how we perceive these bodies. And this is actually technique in itself, or literacy in itself. And I think with each new document, new ways of reading dance and interpreting dance develop, in fact.
Mm. I'm going to make this the last question because of the combination of time and temperature.
It's more like a reflection on all this. It's like we're talking about languages, but isn't like there's only like English, German, French, Turkish, but like the visual language, the kinesthetic language, and a performance in itself is a documentation to a specific audience from a specific person's interpretation of his own experience in life, whatnot. You know, it be it political, be it social, be it just very psychological, what you know, or physical. So it's all about transmitting. And again, going back to the audience issue, some people are prone to some languages and can receive impulse from specific things and some others. And even within the language, linguistics, there's really articles, academic articles, brainy articles, and there's poetry, there's stories, there's novels, you know, and then you get something on sometimes on your cortex, sometimes in your limbic brain. So, but I think rather than just specifying it into language, it's more about this transmitting what. And as you were saying, the subjectivity, what am I going to do with the thing? Sometimes I watch a performance, it triggers a lot of things in my life or in my academic work or something, or in my teaching, getting back to more teaching and documenting. So it's really this interdependent subjective relation I would like to agree and point out once again.
I think, and what did you say, an interactive relation between the two? Yeah, a dialogue between the doing and the thinking and reflecting and putting out and sharing and digesting. On that note, I want to thank you all for your patience on this very hot day and for having your brains with us, which is very appreciated. And I know it costs you in this temperature. And thank you all very much. It's been really fascinating. And we'll continue the conversation for the next 3 days.